IndieCan Music presents the first ever Vancouver Indie Scene. This is a front row seat and backstage pass to West Coast indie life. Neil Osborne of 5440 will be here to talk about his 20 plus years in the Canadian music scene. But first, live from IndieCan West, it's The Smears. Welcome to IndieCan. Glad you can make it.
Thank you.
Yeah, history-breaking radio. Welcome to the first Vancouver indie scene. It's great to have you.
Thanks.
Pleasure.
So you got a new CD. Is that out now?
Not
or
yet.
In the works?
It's coming out in February.
Tell us about putting that together.
Well, it's been a long work in progress. Three of the songs we recorded a couple years ago, and decided not to release a demo and just go ahead and record a whole album. So it's 11 songs, and it's just getting wrapped up now and hopefully out in February if everything goes according to plan.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you plan on doing with that? Do you plan on putting a tour around the CD release, or what's the plan for promoting it?
Yeah, I guess the only thing we really want to do is tour. And we're just trying to get all our ducks in line so that we can just go out on the road. And that's just our creating a product to leave something behind wherever we go. So hopefully we can return and...
Yeah. You can bring other friends.
And... Yeah. For sure.
Leave the day jobs behind for a while.
Yes, yep. Please.
Damn yeah. Straight.
That'd be nice.
Now, are y'all on the same page as far as influences, or do y'all come to the Smears from a completely different place?
He's all over the map.
He's all over the place.
Pretty wide variety of tastes.
It's all kinds of stuff going on.
Well, let's hear it.
Yeah.
What makes up the Smears? What are the major influences for each of you?
They're pretty punk rock, and there's other stuff too, but... We tend to listen to like a lot of PG Harvey and Concrete Blonde and Trail of Dead and stuff like that. Not that they don't like it too, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Dustin's more of your punk rock.
Yeah, I was raised as a punk rock kid, I guess.
From punk rock parents?
No, they're just the hippie parents, I guess. And yeah, I got into punk rock early on, and I'm still trying to get out of it, but I can't.
You're trying to get out of it?
No, I'm just trying to widen my horizons.
But your natural music. Tendency is punk. And
yeah. It needs to be fast.
Well, that's what I like about us. Like, we all bring, like, something, like, a different feel. And we've had, this band's been going for 5 years, and me and Ange were the only two original members. We've changed bass player and guitars. They've kind of come and go, and as the musicians have changed, the Smears have changed. And what we really enjoy is just having everybody bring their own style, and the fact that we do have different... influences, I feel, kind of brings together something a bit more unique. So that's just the way I feel about it.
It is a unique sound. I really like it. It's quite fresh. I mean, it is very punky, but, you know, a classic rock and roller could find some love for it, too. I mean, it's got some hooks to it as well.
Yeah, I think it doesn't really punk isn't known stick for. To any certain genre. It's just rock and roll. Everybody likes rock and roll.
My
tell me about the music scene in Vancouver. Are you all from Vancouver originally? Is this has this always been home base, or where are you from?
None of us are from here.
Yeah. I'm from the Schwa.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Thanks for admitting that. Yeah, the mullet's gone, we wouldn't have known.
No, I just cut it off last summer, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty hard about it.
Where's everyone else come from?
I'm from Saskatchewan.
I'm from South Africa, originally.
She came the furthest.
Yeah.
And I'm from northern BC.
Northern British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
And y'all ended up in Vancouver for different reasons and found each other. It's charming. Kudos go, though. I don't care how far you came from. Getting out of the Schwa is a... And, you know, you got to respect that. Mm-hmm. Represent. Schwaberry. So, tell our listeners about the Vancouver music scene. Is it great? Is it really lacking? What would you alter or improve about it?
I'd make more venues.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What do you mean by that? There's just
not a lot of live music venues here. Not like, say, Toronto or even like Alberta has got better live venues than we do, it seems. I mean, there's a couple of good ones here, but I don't know. They just all seem to sort of fall by the wayside to build more condos. And, you know, we just
Richard we're dropping Richard.
Off. Once the town pump went away, it was just all downhill from there.
The town pump is gone?
Yeah.
Oh shit, I'm way behind.
Yeah, it's been gone for about 11 years.
It's killing me. Oh. Let's bring it back.
Oh, I know. My heart bleeds a little every day.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool place.
That was awesome. I loved it.
What do you plan to do with your tour? How far are you going?
We're out of gas.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to go, like, well, feasibly, probably like Montreal and back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It'd be nice. Maybe, you know, work on getting in the States in a little bit.
Yeah. It'd be cool. Yeah, dipping down to the States would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
So it's playing the States or drive an hour and play a show. Here you drive 14 hours to play a show.
Yeah. We were talking about that. It's just so much easier, isn't it?
No. Mm-hmm.
When, you're 40 minutes between venues and it's a completely different neighborhood, a completely different audience as opposed to, you know, Calgary to Saskatoon. You know, that's...
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, your shortest drive, like 6 hours.
Yeah.
Especially in January.
Yeah, that's a good time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Going to the mountains in the snow, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. As you were saving up for new tires, but man.
Yeah.
Should let them in on my Canadian tire plan. I think they'd make a great sponsor for bands on the road.
Well, yeah. Totally. Make a commercial about it.
Yeah, exactly. They can make a commercial about it. They can actually give you Canadian tire money because you can use it. Other than instruments, everything you need is there. They have, chips and pop.
Yeah.
Maybe Planters peanuts, you know. But, you know, they've got duct tape. You know, they've got batteries. They've got tires. They've got gasoline.
Got little heaters.
Yeah, that's right. They got sleeping bags.
Well, every car accessory you can think of.
Exactly. They've got Febreze. That
was good, Andy. Right. And 40 pants over there.
And the bands could accept Canadian Tire money at par, you know, for the entry fee. I mean, you can use it anyway.
That's a great idea.
Nice.
And we actually know the manager of Canadian Tire, so maybe I'll hit her up.
Yo, what's up, Adrian?
We'll get it going. Okay. So, anyway, I can see where this is going. South. But thanks for coming in. It was great having you.
Thanks,
Jack. And I will watch your careers with delight. I expect big things from you, okay?
Awesome.
Thank you very much.
Awesome.
Inside. This is Neil Osborne from 5440, and you're listening to IndieCan Radio.
Defend to make it out alive. I know that bullet's meant for me. I know, so pull the trigger and we'll see. Damage on the inside, where it
Sweet. That's Elias. Before that, we heard TV Heart Attack, and we opened the set up with the Golden Dogs, who are label mates for 5440. Thanks to Sue McCallum for hooking me up with that CD. We heard Saints at the Gate. The whole CD is fantastic. Wherever you are in Canada, they're on the road now, and I hope you get a chance to see the Golden Dogs. Now, Elias, who we ended that set with, I met them at the first showcase I got to when I was here in Vancouver. They shared the stage with Lotus Child and Tom Howie. I also met Dom, the drummer for Elias, is also the drummer for TV Heart Attack. TV Heart Attack opened for 5440, the concert I saw at the Commodore Ballroom on Saturday. And so that's how they're intertwined. I'm very excited about actually creating programming here in Vancouver. It's something I've always wanted to do. IndieCan has always wanted to be the musical voice for the entire country, and getting out here is really a landmark for us. Thanks to Tom at Vertical Productions, who provided us the space and the engineering expertise. We couldn't have done it without him. And thanks to the whole community. I've just been embraced since I've been here. I've met so many great artists and heard so much good music. Saw Sweetheart play with Super Being at the Roxy. That was a great show. I've got more great music to see while I'm here. Two bandmates from Cobweb Society I just met recently, Jay and Carly. Thank you for introducing your new EP. In fact, IndieCan listeners, you're the first to hear it. I got a copy of their master right hot off the press. And they're a punk band that actually sounds like a punk band. A lot of people think of punk as an attitude, but this reminds me of the old classic style. And I'm going to share a song with you. Let's have a look. Here's a good one. How about End of Radio? Ladies and gentlemen, Cobweb Society.
This is the end of radio. All the crap coming through your stereo. Today, gone tomorrow. This is it. End of radio. All the crap coming through your stereo. Today, gone tomorrow. This is it. Number one song better than mine, I said. It better be better than that. Number one song better than mine, I said.
Hey, this is Squid from the Smears, and I hear it first on IndieCan Radio.
Guts of our God. gossip diet. Gossip diet, your eminency. Just come and tell me how you want me to be. Every crack I bust, I'm under the gun.
Nice finish. That was Indie Can West's engineer Tom Dobransky's band Lotus Child with the title track of their full-length CD Gossip Diet. They will be the feature artists of Vancouver Indie Scene Episode 2, so let's look forward to that. Now, why did I fly all the way across the country? One of the reasons was for our next guest. Neil Osborne of 5440 got his start musically, or as that band, in the mid-80s as an indie act. They quickly became signed to a major label and became much music darlings for a couple of decades. They've now gone full circle. They're with independent label True North. They've got 11 records under their belt. And if you are a student of the never-ending history of our music, get your notepads ready. Let's welcome Neil Osborne into the studio. Neil, thanks for coming on the show. I was looking forward to interviewing you. Can we, let's see, there's so much we can cover, so little time. Talk a little bit about the band now and what, for instance, Brad, your bass player, described Say Yes to Everything as the first album of the second half of 5440's career. Do you feel the same way about that?
I understand where he's coming from. We have Dave Ginn in the band now. He replaced Phil Comparelli. So, yeah, we did, that was the first original record where Dave was a contributor, you know. And, yeah, I would say it's a symbolic in the sense that we're not so much into careering, although that's important. It's more into creating, you know. So we're comfortable as artists just with the creative process. We're fortunate enough to be able to continue making a living. So it's more we can explore what we're doing creatively. You ask what we're doing now. We're actually, we got an ambitious project right now, and it's to record 100 songs and write and record them. And that is going to be our next album, is 100 songs. I don't know how technologically it's going to be released, but it's not my problem. Probably internet.
100 songs.
100 songs.
Yeah. Yeah. Any idea what the price structure is going to be? Or
No. You know, I don't know. It's, you know, I did a record for a band called Jets Overhead.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, they just gave it away on the internet.
Yeah.
And it helped. You know, it helped create a buzz and stuff like that.
What's different about this millennium? I mean, your career started in the 80s, and, you know, I remember what was going on there, but do you go about music differently? Do you have to think, you know, things aren't like they were? What's different now for you as an artist, other than the fact that you've got some street credibility that you might not have when you were thinking about putting out your first record?
I don't know. I mean, there's a... I think you try to hang on to what's the same rather than really worry about what's different. I mean, what's different is all external kind of stuff. What's the same is the way the music works on you or the listener or whatever. You know, if you like an old, I don't know, a Joy Division song or whatever, or even a Creedence song, or whatever it is, there's something that still rings true for you. Depending on how you grew up and what music you listen to, it's part of your background. And then being in a band, you know, playing live, getting that rush, getting that connection, being present in that connection, yeah, is consistent.
Right. That's no different.
Yeah. And that's what you have.
Yeah.
All the other stuff, I mean, tons of things have changed. It depends what area you want to talk about. I mean, it's an encyclopedia of options, you know, in terms of recording, in terms of sound quality, in terms of the business, you know, in terms of the actual medium that it's on. So it's done, you know, we started out, did an indie, you know, vinyl release, and then we got signed to Warner Brothers, and we did a record, our first record for them. And then the second record, you know, was like, good news, they're going to do a limited run of CDs, you know. Zoom to the 90s, we're on Sony, you know, and we begged them to do a limited vinyl release. And
right.
They said it cost too much and they wouldn't do it.
They wouldn't do
you
it.
You know. So, like, what happened there? So there you go.
Do you think about or obsess about or care about who's listening to your music? Are you fanatical about, you know, if songs aren't being spun, why aren't they being spun? Or what's the demographic of the 5440 fan?
We did a show last night in Vancouver here at the Commodore, sold out show. And the first, whatever, front rows of people there, I didn't even think they were old enough to have their license.
Yeah.
And it shocked the heck out of me. I didn't, you know, wow, what are they doing here? You know, shouldn't they be listening to, you know, some other bands or something like that? But they're into it, so that was kind of neat to see. I don't worry about that. I suppose there was a time, you know, because you know, whenever you release a record, you think everybody should love this because you put your whole heart and soul into this.
Yeah. Right?
And you can't understand why the whole world doesn't recognize it. And from every artist that I've known and my own experience in the past, you're never satisfied. And I suppose that's a quality of an artist, is you're never satisfied with what you've done, and you're never satisfied with the response to it. The trick is not to get too worried about the response to it.
Right.
You know, in other words, live to make more stuff later. Don't get obsessed. So we've gotten past the stage once again where we really worry about that, those terminologies. And those terminologies come from outside anyways. people ask you what your demographic is. I mean, that the day, I remember the day that word got applied to music, and I went, oh my God, you know, this is worse than the war in Iraq. This is bad news.
They've commoditized art.
Yeah. Or, you know, doing interviews, you know, when we first got signed, it's like, how many records do you think you'll sell? Well, what's that got? You know, when I was a fan of music, you know, in the 70s and stuff, no interview that I ever read with a band, because there was no videos back in those days, was about how many records do you think you'll sell? You know, not that I remember. It was about, where were you coming from when you wrote this song, man?
That's right. You know? It was about the art. Yeah. Whether it was Cream magazine or Rolling Stone magazine.
Or who were your influences, or, which is still a question that you get asked. But it wasn't about, you know, the commercial success. And sort of, you know, that's probably what's happened, is the TV generation has sort of made celebrities out of people who play music, and the fact that they're celebrities supersedes what the music actually is a lot of the time. If you're still a fan of our band after the sort of records that we've done over the years and today, I think you're with us. I think you get it.
Yeah.
You know, and not that you have to. Because, you know, we've sort of got fans, dropped fans, got new fans, you know, especially in the more popular years, right? The current radio song attracts people. Some people move on from that kind of thing. But those that have sort of ridden with us the whole way, I guess they appreciate something like we do, you know, that there's something, wherever this muse that we're tapping into, that's where they're, you know, Mount Olympus, that's where they're from, you know, like where we're from.
Yeah, they're touching.
Not necessarily us, but more the fact that whatever we tap into, that's what they're fans of.
Yeah, and they're touched by that.
And and I got to respect them for that, and I think it's great, you know, that they get it. Not that they get us, they just get where we're coming from, the place that we come from, not who we are, the place that musically where we come from. And that's an awesome feeling. It validates what we do.
Now, when you go to create a new record, I mean, you use other influences. You know, shamelessly draw upon other influences. You talked about sitting down for one album and listening to Cream and sort of late 60s stuff and how that influenced that particular album. The Flatlands album, totally, it was, you know, thematic in the way you did it.
Yeah.
Someone on the way to the studio must have been listening to AC/DC before you recorded Yes to Everything,
because
you can hear some of those sounds, you know, in there.
For sure.
And is that typical? You go, okay, what's going on out there? What am I liking? And just sort of, okay, I'm going to take a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Or do songs sometimes come at you in their natural form, where you've got the whole structure to it and it's just a matter of marrying lyrics to it?
Sometimes that happens. Sometimes it's a case of, you know, I'm just sitting there and a song just sort of pops out. You know, it's just usually what I do is I just follow the melody and the attitude, and, you know, the chords have to catch up to that. But making albums, we always, you know, it's a lot like maybe Greek mythology or something, where you invoke a certain muse. So sometimes, it's a muse of 60s kind of soul R&B inspired music, or, you know, for when the Trusted by Millions record, our muse was Lodger, Scary Monsters, and that other Bowie record, the Berlin Trilogy, whatever those ones were.
Heroes?
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. Anyway, we just sort of spawn those records all the time and, you know, listen to the riffs and try to half learn them and then apply them to what we were working on. And, you know, it didn't sound like that.
Yeah.
But it was just sort of, that was the overseer of what we were doing. We always pick an overseer. And what that does is it creates a nice limitation, you know, because to work within a limitation conceptually is a good idea. It's not a rule. It's just like an invoking a god that kind of, you know, I don't know, looks down on you, and it's a reference point. It's a bouncing back or a mirroring, right? Excuse that.
Yeah.
The thing that we're doing now with 100 songs, one of the reasons why we're doing 100 songs is because every record we have done some kind of a concept strategically or setting a limitation, but this is the concept in itself. Mm-hmm. When you can do, when you say to yourself as a band, we're just going to write and record 100 songs, it's an open table. Anything can come out, right?
Right.
So, you know, it can be 30 seconds, it can be 10 minutes, it can be whatever, you know? So that's the beauty of that. It's very freeing, because I find when, you know, having done 11 albums, as soon as you start to narrow in, you know, you notice that your perspective narrows as well. And I don't want that to happen now. Right. I like to create a song that's almost half done. It's always the music that I like the best.
Yeah.
When I'm creating and when I'm listening, you know. I like somebody just singing with a guitar because you can hear all this potential in it.
Yeah.
You know, and the listener wants to hear that too. I don't, I'm one of those people that doesn't like something that's overproduced and sounds like $1 million and all shiny. And there's no room for me. There's no room to relate to it.
We were talking about that earlier today.
Right. Yeah. So creating this thing where it's just sort of delivered and it's kind of raw and there's a lot of room for what it could be. I don't mean make it bad, but it's almost better if it's bad than too good.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
because you lose the connection.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And with 100 to do, you know, you're not going to overdo it. You'll get on way. To the next one. Yeah, that's good right. enough.
Yeah.
Next.
Got to move on.
37, here we come.
That's right. Well, we're 24 done now. And we started at the beginning of October. So,
looking back, I mean, it must be like children. It's very hard to pick favorites. But do you have a favorite album, a song you're most proud of, something that you go, wow, you know, if I died tomorrow, you know, thank God I got that out of my system. I presented it to the world.
Well, that happens from time to time. I mean, in a sense, the song called This Is Here, This Is Now, off the Yes to Everything, was a song that for a long time has been waiting to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out. And it's just, you know, in my artistic attitude, it's like, that's it. That's what I've been trying to say. Whatever, it's, you know, then I can look at a song like I Go Blind and, you know, thank the Lord that my mortgage was paid from one song.
Yeah.
You know, done by Hootie. Even better. Yeah. Someone else does the work for you. You know, so I gotta like that one, you know.
Yeah.
And then there's a, you know, a song like One Gun that's inspired, you know, from meeting my wife and, you know, human rights and all those sort of things. So, you know, it's a sentimental favorite. Albums, same kind of thing. They represent different eras of our lives together as a band and just as people in the world. You know, it's like that was going on at that point in time. I kind of like the Small Buddha Cabaret album. Consistently, it's up there for me.
Yeah.
A lot of the reason for that is it's very similar to what we're doing now in the sense that it was our demos. You know, we recorded that record really fast. In fact, the song Ocean Pearl, I'm calling out the arrangement to the band, and that's the take. You know, I'm going G,
yeah,
B, right, and then I went and sang it after.
Yeah,
we went to L.A. with Don Smith and tried to redo those demos. Spent over $200,000 U.S., which is unheard of these days, and it's unheard of now. I mean, we didn't have those budgets now, trust me, but in those days you did, and it just stunk. And so we were in the fortunate position with Sony at the time where we just had to hand in masters. Nobody from the record company listened or anything. So we did a double switch. We had the record from Don Smith that was all shiny and produced and icky.
Yep.
And lacked life. And we turned in our demos.
Yeah.
To Sony. So here it is. And they said, this is amazing. Don Smith did a great job, you know. So we actually ended up using a few of the songs that he did, but most of it, you know, Ocean Pearl and all the singles were our demos.
Oh, that's a cool story.
Yeah, and you got to be able. That was a big moment for us in recognizing what we liked about what we did, and that we fit more into the camp of, I guess, a Neil Young kind of, you know, just make it kind of down and dirty and ready, rather than, you know, contrived or polished or whatever.
Neil, thanks. You've been very generous with your time, and I really appreciate it, and I'm sure our listeners will. Looking forward to seeing your show tonight and looking forward to your next 100 songs.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks also to Laura at 5440 to help arrange that interview for me. Well, it's a wrap. It's been great. Look forward to doing it again. I'm going to close with Marble Rye. Met Jared when I first got off the plane, the first venue I was at. He shared his CD with me, and I'm going to share it with you. This is from Tight Pants, Wide Stance. See you next time.
For information on the artists featured on today's show, visit IndieCan.com.